Today on the Strang Report, I get to interview none other than Governor Mike Huckabee. Hello, everyone. This is Stephen Strang, and I am so honored to be able to interview him. As you may know, I supported his campaign in 2008 and have kept in touch with him. We did a cover story in Charisma Magazine about him, and I've interviewed him on other podcasts. He endorsed a couple of my books. And today, I have a conversation with him about cancel culture and what's happening in our society. We talk about wokeness in the church. We talk about charges of racism by those on the left that are baseless, how it's moving towards socialism and communism. And then we talk about what's happening on Christian television and his great show that I'm sure you watch, as I do, and if not, you need to watch, Huckabee on TBN. So stay tuned for my conversation with none other than Governor Mike Huckabee.
Welcome to the Strang Report with Stephen Strang, the founder of Charisma. This podcast is to encourage you to experience the power of the Holy Spirit and to discuss spiritual issues facing the church, our nation, and the world.
Governor Huckabee, I appreciate you taking time from your busy schedule to be on my podcast today. Of course, I've known and admired and respected you for many years. And as you remember, I supported you for president in 2008. My, the country would be different if you had been elected instead of Barack Obama. Just give me your observations on what's happened since 2008.
Well, first of all, I appreciate your longstanding friendship, and it's certainly a delight to get to visit with you now. You know, the country has gone through some pretty serious and dramatic changes, and I would quickly say they're not good ones. The biggest change is that we've gone from a society that believes in the power as well as the responsibility of the individual to more of a focus on collectivism, which is really the heart and foundation of socialism, i.e. communism. And I know those are rather bold assertions to say that we're moving towards socialism, but we are. When people see their identity, not as an individual, but as part of a group that they had nothing to do with, whether it's their race or their gender, these are God-given characteristics that we have, but they don't define us. They simply describe us, and that's a big difference. But what we're seeing now is a rapid move toward the notion that I'm really not an individual. I'm not a specific creation of an almighty God who made me for a purpose. I'm just a piece of the puzzle. My existence is there for the purpose and the benefit of the state, and my existence is largely utilitarian and not personal. Therefore, if I'm not personally accountable and I don't have a personal sense of belonging to a God-driven purpose, then my life's going to be pretty messed up. And I think that's what we're seeing. And I didn't mean to go off into the philosophical weeds, but Stephen, that's really where this country has gone. And it's not so much a Democrat, Republican, left, right issue. I know it may seem like that. This is far bigger than a political divide. As I have often said, this is not horizontal. This is vertical. This is not just left and right. This is up and down. This is whether or not we are a God-centered or a man-centered world. And that's what I fear the most.
Well, I agree with you 100%, and I've written about this and covered it, of course, for years. And what's happening, you know, had its roots a long time ago. I mean, you could argue that it started in the 30s with, you know, the emergence of the Communist Party in our country, but certainly in the 60s. I mean, things were pretty bad in the 60s, and then, you know, the pendulum seemed to swing somewhat to the right, at least politically, but also we had the Jesus movement, the charismatic movement in the Catholic Church, you know, some things that happened spiritually that seemed to shift some things. We even had a born-again president in Jimmy Carter, at least, you know, that's what he claimed back in that day. And, you know, in the early 2000s, of course, I could see and many others could see what was happening in our country. And here emerged this person who survived horrible political things in Arkansas to be a very successful governor. He could handle the press like nobody I've ever seen. And man, when you announced for president, in fact, James Robison was the first person that ever told me or called to my attention about this governor from Arkansas, because I'll admit, I don't really follow politics in Arkansas any more than I do in about 48 other states. But,
right.
You emerged and you ended up being second to John McCain. I believe you would have had a better chance to beat Barack Obama than McCain did. But, of course, in politics, coming in second is just merely a consolation prize. But you have got, you know, most of the people who ran that time and when you ran again in 2016, good people have gone back into obscurity other than the few that have elective office like Rand Paul. But you haven't. Your profile in some ways is much, much higher in the country, being on Fox News and now on TBN. And you are bold. You're bold as a lion. But you don't seem to me to get in trouble like some of the conservative people do. How do you walk this fine line?
That's a great question. I wish I had an answer for it. Right now, you know, I'm in some controversy in Arkansas because I'm speaking at the Martin Luther King prayer breakfast this coming Monday, which for me is a non-controversial thing. But the Arkansas Democrat Black Caucus has protested, and they have said that I should be disinvited. They call me a racist, which is absurd. When I was a young pastor of an all-white church, I led the church in admitting first Black members, received death threats for that, but stood my ground and said, you know, if people of color are not welcome in this church, neither is Jesus, and I don't want to be somewhere where he isn't. So we stood our ground. The church actually exploded in growth after that. I was told by some angry people that the church offerings would dry up. Well, in fact, we had the best giving record we'd ever had in a 100-year-old church after that. My point in all of that is to say that of all the things that I've been accused of, racism is the most laughable. But this is the world we're living in today. But as far as I don't think I go around angry. I don't yell at people. It's not my style. I have strong views. I express them as strongly as I possibly can. But I don't do it with anger and with hostility. I typically try as much as I can to do it keeping a sense of humor and recognizing that sometimes people on the other side of the aisle give me so much comedic material unintentionally.
That's
and
funny.
That
yeah.
makes them angry. but some of the stuff they say, it's like that, it's sad and it's tragic, and I don't mean to make light of it, but let me give an example. One of the craziest ideas I've ever heard is the notion that a person can simply wake up one morning and say, I identify as a person of the opposite gender. And somehow I'm supposed to accept that declaration without question. And if that individual who is a biological male decides that day to go into the girls' locker room and shower with biological females, I'm supposed to say that's okay. And I scratched my head and just said, if someone had told guys my age that when we were sophomores in high school, that we could have just gone to the coach and said, hey, coach, we're feeling a little feminine today. We think after PE class, we're going to go shower with the girls. I said, we'd have either, one, been laughed out of the school or been beaten up to a pulp, but nobody would have said, yeah, that's just fine, guys. You go ahead and do that.
Or even more than that is, coach, I can't win competing with the boys, so let me pretend I'm a girl and go compete with the girls, which has happened very, very recently. And then not only athletics, but with Jeopardy. Did you hear about that? That the woman, quote unquote woman, who has the highest points or the highest winnings in Jeopardy is actually a biological male. And you're right. It's just, it's just crazy what's happened, but it's an example. You know, the Bible clearly says God created man and woman. He created marriage.
Right.
And it's like a rejection of the God of the Bible and everything he stands for. And of course, mankind has been rejecting God since the beginning of time. There's always been heretics and anti-God people, but it just seems that it's like a crescendo. It's like they're trying, I wrote this book, God and Cancel Culture, and I said that I believe that the real goal of cancel culture is not to take away Donald Trump's Twitter account, is to actually eliminate Christianity and the effect of Christianity in our culture by culture itself, but also more and more by law. I mean, there's actually been some legislation proposed in California that the Bible would be a hate book. Now, thankfully, that didn't go anywhere, but I mean, just, and if we look back over the last couple of decades, the first time something comes up, it shot down. And then it comes back again. You probably remember the name Anita Bryant. She was down here in Florida singing little ditties for the Florida Citrus Commission. She had all these hit songs. And when there was an anti-discrimination ordinance in Miami, which was one of the first, it was just a nice term for a law that gave some special rights to the gay community, which did not exist as a political force back then. And there was a referendum here in Florida. She headed the fight called Save Our Children. It was in the mid-1970s when I was a cub reporter for the Orlando Sentinel. I remember it really well. And they won that election by like 66%. But they decided to make Anita Bryant persona non grata. If you look at her description on Wikipedia, she is described in the headline as an anti-gay activist. That's the only thing in her life that they think is important to mention. She was one of the first people to be canceled, and we've seen that more and more since then. Where do you think this is going?
Well, I think it's going in the direction you just described. It is not so much a political endeavor. It's a spiritual endeavor, and it's people who genuinely want to erase the notion of moral absolutes in our culture. That's really the goal of wokeism. It's the goal of cancel culture, the notion that some things are right and some things are wrong. And so that's why you have prosecutors who are saying, well, it's really not a crime if somebody only steals up to $1,000. Or if someone commits even a violent crime on the street, we're not going to prosecute them because they may have had some really bad circumstances in their lives. These are ways in which we have transformed the definition of right and wrong. And when even the Supreme Court, or as I call them, the extreme court, decides that they can overturn the God-given definition of marriage, lifelong relationship between one man, one woman, and they can just do it because there's cultural pressure for that. I just find that people are not understanding that these are spiritual issues. They're not political. They take root in political outcomes, but the heart of them, they are spiritual issues where people are rejecting the standard of God and the standard of his word. Stephen, I'm a musician, as you know, and I'm not a great one, but I at least know how to play. I'm a bass guitar player.
Yeah, but you have your own TV show. You're able. You must be pretty good. You've hit the big time. I've seen you play with some pretty big musicians.
Well, you know, and I tell people, I said, I don't get to play with them because I'm that good. I get to play with them because it's my show. So let me be honest. The fact is, before one can play a song, you have to tune the instrument. And if you don't tune the instrument, I don't care how good a musician you are. It's going to be noise and chaos, not music. Now, the question is, what do you tune it to? And the answer is you tune it to a fixed, rigid, very rigid standard. And that's called a tuning fork or a key. And if you don't tune to the same thing and every instrument tunes to what the musician thinks, feels, or believes, it's a train wreck. What we're living in today is a society like the time as it was in the time of the judges when every man did what was right in his own eyes. So we have all these people and cultural entities tuning to what they feel, what they think, what they believe. And the disaster of that is what we're seeing with not just cancel culture and wokeism, but it's the notion that there are no standards, there is no absolute, and all of us get to sort of make up our rules according to what we think they ought to be rather than what God says they are.
And you mentioned the spiritual aspect, and it seems to me that the church has been very passive, and also we're seeing it's becoming more and more liberal, and this is not really new because, you know, the National Council of Churches has always been liberal. You know, we call them mainline denominations, but there's been a core of evangelicals who believe in the virgin birth, believe in salvation through the blood of Jesus, and so forth. But, you know, there's a new documentary called Enemies Within the Church that talks about how the evangelical church, not the whole church, thankfully, but big segments of it, especially among Southern Baptists, are actually going woke. What is happening?
Well, it's very tragic, and it goes back to this notion that people want to be accepted within the culture. They want to be loved. They don't want to be criticized. And I think some of it is more about preventing themselves from having harsh criticism, even than just being invited to the nice, sweet cocktail parties. But the fact is, people have compromised biblical truth in order to be more accepted and less controversial. So one of the ways the left has really shaped our society is by making those of us who, frankly, have been consistent in our biblical worldview, that we're weird, that we're the ones who are out of step. The phrase that I find most amusing is that we're on the wrong side of history. And I'm thinking, no, actually, we're on the only side of history there's been up until now. 5,000 years of defining marriage, and suddenly we have a court that decides to change it. It's not the right or wrong side of history. It's the only side of history, and now some people are rewriting it. So we're living in a time when even in Southern Baptist life, as you have mentioned, I'm appalled when I see people who are just abandoning biblical standards.
And then apologizing for having publicly supported these same standards maybe, you know, 10 years ago. It's bad enough to slide and quit supporting things, but then to publicly come out, you know, that you are homophobic or whatever term they might use. And then that sends a signal to other leaders that this is, you know, what needs to be done. You know, there's still a lot of people that are, I'm going to say conservative, but really that sounds political, still people who adhere to the Bible, but they seem to be timid and they're intimidated and you're right, they want to be accepted by the culture. In fact, one of the New York Times did a story about evangelicals supporting Trump. And because I'd written several books on Trump, you know, of course, they interviewed me and they interviewed some evangelicals, especially at another Christian magazine, that felt that people like me who supported Trump were tarnishing the evangelical brand. And my attitude was, what's this about branding? Why are we trying to brand evangelicals as acceptable to the, as you say, the cocktail crowd or the intellectual academic crowd? It's not about that. And I think it's the same thing you're talking about. So what would you say as we wrap up this short podcast that the individual person can do? You know, a lot of people listen to a podcast like this. In fact, I hope people will share this with their friends because we need to be having this kind of dialogue among many people. But a lot of people, you know, people I talk to just feel kind of helpless to turn the tide. So what can individual people do to stand up to cancel culture, to stand up to this wokeness in the church, other than maybe just quitting a congregation and finding somebody that they, you know, another congregation that they would agree with?
Well, I would certainly say if you're in a congregation that is not adhering to the scriptures, quit wasting your time and your money supporting it. What's the point of being a part of a church that has abandoned the Bible? And I say that without hesitation, Stephen. I think it's just, to me, unbelievable that people would say, yeah, I'm going to keep giving my time and my money to an organization that has decided to reject the Word of God as the basic life standard. You know, I hear people say all the time, I don't want to get involved in politics. You know what? I understand that. But the truth is, you're already involved. you're involved every time the government spends your money on killing an unborn baby. You are involved in politics every time that the government tells you that because you're a Christian, the IRS is going to investigate the organization that you gave money to. I could give a whole litany, but we're already involved. We're involved when our children go to a government school. They're told they can't have any mention of Christmas, but they can mention any kind of secular ideas. They can have Gay Pride Day, but they can't express their Christian faith on See You at the Pole Day, which is a gathering of students, Christians, around a flagpole in September. So I would say to people, live your values, live your commitments and beliefs. And if you aren't going to live your values, then don't pretend that you have them, because you don't. We either are Christians who adhere to the book, or we have abandoned the book. And if we do, then let's be honest about it and say, you know, for me, Christianity is just a cultural thing. It's not an everlasting way of life. That's what I would urge people to think through.
Well, thank you. And thank you for sharing your thoughts and for being on my podcast. And I want you to know that you've got some loyal fans down here in Orlando who watch you every Saturday night on TBN. And I enjoy your monologue at the beginning. To me, that's the best. And you have a lot of interesting guests. And, you know, I think that your show kind of typifies the new TBN. I mean, Matt and Lori and the others are doing a great job of kind of moving into the new media era. And it was quite a coup for them to get you on their network. So is there anything you want to say about your program? And really what I want to do is give you the last word.
Well, you're very kind. I'm grateful to Matt and Lori Crouch. They've been so supportive. They took a real chance by making this program, Huckabee, on the weekends, on Saturday and Sunday nights, even possible. They've invested in it to make it a really terrific show and give it production value that's second to none. But more than anything, they understood that the future of reaching people is not just with what I would call, and without offense, tag team preaching. Because while there's a wonderful place for good biblical teaching and preaching on a Christian network, we also need to be reaching out to people who may not be as church-oriented. It's not a Christian talk show. It's a talk show hosted by a Christian, and that's what I think people can enjoy. It's wholesome, it's entertaining, informative, inspirational, but it's not an in-your-face, and it's not trying to raise your blood pressure. It's been a wonderful experience doing it.
Well, thank you. And I just so appreciate you, as I said earlier. And I appreciate the fact that a friendship has even continued past that campaign way back then. It was actually the first time I ever got involved in a political campaign. But that's because I believed in the things that you stand for. And, you know, in a lot of ways, Donald Trump picked up where you left off, in my opinion. And got the same people supported him that supported you. So there you have
right.
it. And so thank you to my listeners for tuning into my podcast today. This is Stephen Strang. Tune in again tomorrow for another episode of The Strang Report on the Charisma Podcast Network. God bless you. I'm back in the studio, and I wanted to add something about my new book, God and Cancel Culture. You know, Mike Huckabee gave me an endorsement, a very nice endorsement. He said, Stephen Strang is undoubtedly one of the most influential Christian leaders of our time. He boldly confronts the ugly assault on what has been unleashed on conservative and Christian voices in our country and offers a fresh perspective of hope and faith for the future. I really appreciate that endorsement, and I hope it encourages you to read the book. Of course, you can buy it many places, Barnes & Noble, of course, Amazon.com, other places like Mardell's. But you can also get it from my website called SteveStrangBooks.com, where you can get an autographed copy. There are certain specials that are there. So pick up the book, share it with others. I believe that it's a good read. And I just wanted to encourage you at the end of this, what I believe is one of my best podcasts ever, be sure to share it with others and help me get out the word about God and cancel culture.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Stephen Strang. Stay up to date with the latest episodes by subscribing on your favorite podcast app and at cpnshows.com. Get the latest reports delivered directly to your inbox by subscribing at strangreport.com.